Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host and guests are not to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. It's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Advices Radio is presented by Naps Gear. Today, I am with James Potter. He is a bodybuilder that I've been following for some time. We're friends on Facebook. This guy has an amazing physique. And here's the thing. He's from Australia, which to me is like a totally different world. And lately, I've been following a lot of what's going on. I feel like Australia has this like really awesome, and a real honest and hardcore vibe when it comes to bodybuilding. It reminds me of the roots of when I grew up in the sport. So I just thought to myself, man, I got to get this guy on here, and I want to pick his brain, talk about his training in Australia, talk about where he came from, and maybe try to get some tips from him too about, how I can be better in the sport. So James, thanks for being here, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
So right now, this time difference is blowing my mind. It's like 5:30 here in Detroit, and it's what, like 8:30 where you're at, huh?
8:30 Sunday morning here.
Sunday morning the next day. So that's pretty cool. How's your morning going so far?
It's good. I put my dogs out the back, so we've got some peace and quiet. Barking up a storm just before, of course.
So were mine. So thankfully we got them all sorted out. So, I've been looking at your contest history here. You started competing quite some time ago. 92, you competed as a teenager. That was your first show, right?
Yeah, I did two shows in 1992. I started training in March of 92 and I competed in September of 92. I did two shows back to back a week apart and got first in my first show, and I think I was just hooked since then.
Nice.
And the second show I got second, and I was still happy with that because it was a good experience. And then ever since then, throughout all my teenage years, I was 100% into bodybuilding.
Man, tell me about the Australian scene. I mean, I've been listening to, I don't know if you're familiar with Biodefined Radio or Bodybuilding Nation Radio, but they're both Australian shows that the guys just have a passion for the sport. I can hear it in their voices. I've just been really fascinated with what's going on over there. Can you tell me more about bodybuilding in Australia?
Back when I started in the 90s, obviously training in the gyms and that. Currently now I've got a pretty good home set up, so I kind of keep to myself a little bit and I venture out to the gyms every now and then.
Okay.
But back in the 90s, I guess it was the same feel as the US because we kind of, we read the American magazines back then and everything like that. But it was a much smaller community, I guess, and the gyms had a different feel about them. They weren't... Well, obviously, none were 24 hours, and I think the membership base was a bit smaller. Okay. There weren't as many people training, and like there are today, but there were more. I think there were more actual bodybuilders, especially at the shows and that. The local shows and the state bodybuilding shows. There was more competitors.
But
there were less people actually doing it than what there are today. I think because of the different classes and. You got everyone's competing now, but when you walk into a gym, you don't really see any or a lot of hardcore bodybuilders that you used to see, even at a local level.
Okay, it's like that here too. So it sounds like, in that respect, things are pretty similar.
Yeah, like we'd go back into when I started training, you'd walk in, every member, and you know who the guys who competed were, or just the guys who were serious, and it was. Really, we're all pretty close, even if we didn't hang out outside the gym together. When we came to the gym, you'd always say g'day and you'd be training alongside them, and it was just a really good atmosphere. You know, you finish your workout, you'd be drinking your shake, you know, on the counter, flicking through a magazine and talking training and you know, what's happening at the Olympia and who won what, and yeah, just looking at the photos, and it's really good vibe to it back then.
I can relate to that feeling. I remember that feeling myself. So you mentioned that you have a home gym now. I've seen pictures of this place, man. That's an amazing facility that you have set up. Calling it a home gym is modest.
It looks like a little 24-hour studio. Yeah, really. We actually, when my wife was designing the house, we designed the house around the gym.
No kidding.
Yeah. It's bigger than our living area, but and I've still had to cut it down. Like I don't have any leg equipment in there anymore, but because I'll venture out and go and train at a gym.
Okay.
Otherwise, become a hermit and stay at home all day if I go out sometimes. But it's all commercial equipment, everything, and it's just really great training from home. Every now and then, I feel like getting out, and you just want to train around other people sometime.
Yeah.
Even though you don't really want to talk to them when you're out training. It's just the energy around you.
Yeah.
But sometimes, especially after work and that, you just want to come home and train. Or, you know, if I'm feeling, I don't know, sitting at home at 8 o'clock at night and I feel like training arms, I can just walk to the next room and train arms. And that's really good having it at home.
Man, yeah, that's definitely nice. I can tell you that just getting to the gym for me it's a hassle sometimes. And if it's 20, 25 minutes away even, which isn't that far, you add that on to your travel time. And before you know it, you got a lot of commitment, you know, set up there. Plus, you can have you've got your dogs. They can be down in the gym with you too, I bet, right?
Oh, they always are, yeah. I see VJ training in his gym with his dogs and that too, and I can relate to that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's setting up a pretty cool home gym himself. It's coming together. If I recall, your gym is red, correct?
My old one was. You've probably seen some older pics. It's got it's white walls, and it's got an orangey.
Orangey, there, okay.
To it, yeah.
He was trying to pick out a color to paint his gym, so I was looking for some suggestions. I told him that red was a power color and that would help him.
It is, but I think I just got over red. I've always had red in the gyms and that, but I don't know, it was a bit like an aggressive color, you know, when you go in. And
yeah,
orange is good. It's kind of a nice color to wake up to when you're in there in the morning. It's kind of vibrant, but it's not. It's yeah. So we both picked it out and it worked out well. I really like it.
Nice. So can you take me back? You know, you had said your first shows were in 92, you were a teenager. What did you weigh then compared to the later shows you had done, say like your most recent shows were in 2009?
I started, I think when I started training I was barely 50 kilos, which is probably about 110 pounds.
Wow. And how tall are you?
At the moment, about 5'5"
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm pretty short. About 50 kilos, but I was very skinny. I think I remember my legs. I measured them the first week of training with my mate. We measured up all our body parts, and my legs were 20.5 inches.
No kidding.
Yeah. 6 years later, my arms were 20.5 inches.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah. I grew a bit. But, yeah, so my first show, I think I was around 55 kilos, so maybe up to about the 120-pound mark.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I was 14, so I was very lean. The guy that I beat, he had been training for a couple of years. He was 17, and I think he was just about 20, 30 pounds heavier, but, you know, I was just in better condition.
Nice. Yeah, conditioning wins the shows, right?
Yeah. I was surprised because he was a monster in the gym. Well, back to me, he was back then.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God, but, you know, I remember doing cable crossovers on the crossover machine one day before I even thought about competing. I think I've been training for about 2 months. And the gym owner come up to me and goes, oh, you got really good cuts in your chest.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, what the hell are cuts? I didn't even know what he meant. And he goes, you should compete. And I was just like, yeah, okay. And, yeah, then I did a couple months later.
No kidding, man. And then during your last competitions in 2009, what had you worked up to stage weight wise?
Well, my biggest was probably my Facebook photo of the side chest comparisons and the last one.
Okay.
That was 2006. I was 206 pounds on stage. And the 2009 one, it was just a comp that I'd sort of done away with competing after 2006. I joined the Army Reserve because at the time my wife was in the full regular Army.
Okay.
And it's something I always wanted to do before I wanted to be a bodybuilder. So I was in, you know, the cadets and that when I was younger. So it was either be a bodybuilder or, you know, be a soldier or something like that. So I thought, you know what, I'll join the Army Reserve and do that for a little while. And then did that for a few years and then sort of wanted to compete again, but not at the level I was previously. I just wanted to do a show because, like I said, you know, I love training and I love dieting and the preparation that goes into it. The competing, I can take it or leave it. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
So I did a local state show for the NABBA Federation.
All right.
And yeah, they're really well run here and I like the promoter. Mark Ryan, his name is. So I thought, you know what, I'll support that show and I'll do that show. I didn't tell anyone I was competing. I think I told the guys at work I was just doing a 12-week challenge. And about a couple of days before, I said, oh, I'm going to a show. You better, you know, rock up if you want to watch me.
Nice.
And I rocked up and I was the shortest and lightest guy in the whole show, but I won the overall. So
no kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't go on to the Nationals and that because I just didn't feel like it. So, and that was the last show I did in 2009. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to tell everybody here too, you know, we're not just talking to an average guy. I feel like you sound very humble in everything you're saying, but we are talking to a 2004 Mr. Australia, and tell me if I'm saying this right, the Mr. Australasia? Am I getting that right? I asked you before the show.
Australasia.
That's a 2006 Mr. Australasia, which I didn't know what that was. I had to look the term up, and this is it's a region not just Australia but New Zealand and the surrounding islands, correct?
Yeah, pretty much so. But like I said, mainly Aussies will compete in it.
Okay.
And it's a national level show. And the year I competed in it, there was a pro qualifier for it as well. So if you'd won a national title previously, you could go to the pro qualifier and compete for your pro card. So that's what I was training for originally.
Okay.
And 6 weeks out or so, I just felt like, you know what, I'm not really – don't want a pro card because just didn't want to have to do the things you needed to do to be a pro. I was just – content with everything I had in my life at the time, and I just loved competing.
Yeah.
But this was before the 212 division, or back then the 202s even came about. So I didn't stand on stage with guys 50, 60 pounds heavier.
Right.
And at that time in bodybuilding, the physiques I looked up to, like the Labradas and the Sean Rays and that type of physique is probably closer to what I could attain. They wouldn't have done well at that time either.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I'm not going to be a pro just so I've got to say I've got a pro card, because either I'm going to be a pro and be competitive and, you know, fight for titles and things like that, or I'm just going to be happy with what I've done. So, yeah, I decided to pull out of that pro qualifier, which was held on the same day anyway.
Okay.
And I did the open heavyweights instead.
Oh man. And I'm looking at the future of, you know, we developed the 202 that turned into the 212, and
you would have been
amazing for that division.
Yeah. Well, it's always been in my mind now that division's come back to, you know, like make a comeback.
Okay.
And do that. But I don't think I even want to do that at that stage. Everyone always asks me, when are you going to compete? When are you going to compete? But I don't know. Like I can't say. It's hard to answer them because you say, no, I'm not going to compete again. And then in a few years you do. Or you say, I am going to compete again, which I have done in the past. And then I end up not competing. So I just say, you know, I'm happy training now and doing what I'm doing. And I'm still only 38. So, you know, guys are hitting their peaks in their mid-40s now.
Yeah.
So, you know, bodybuilding wise, I'm still, you know, I'm not over the hill. But, you know, if I compete again, I'll compete again. But I'll bring a look that I like to the stage. So even the 212 guys now, they're just getting, I think, almost too big. It's you're not seeing guys like the Labradas and the Sean Rays up there.
Yeah.
You're seeing, this is only my opinion too, and not that it's wrong, it's because, you know, I still follow the 212s and that now, but you're seeing guys like super heavyweight guys just squash down a couple of foot. They just look blown out. Although David Henry is probably one of my favorites, I really like his shape, and I think he doesn't really get the placings he deserves, but yeah, he's amazing, that guy.
He really is. One of the best hands class, most musculars I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's just got that really crisp, separated look to him. They're very clean lines.
Yes, he does.
And he's quite big, but he doesn't look, you know, some guys just look overdeveloped somehow, you know. But he looks really, yeah, just everything's nice and clean and symmetrical on him.
What are your thoughts on the new classic physique division then? Do you think there'll be room for like the Labrada type physiques to come up there?
The bodybuilding one you're talking about, would they wear the short kind of Arnold
sir.
Trunk?
Yes, sir.
I actually was thinking about that division, but in the amateurs, the weights are so, the body weights are so low.
Yeah.
And for my height, I'd have to be 73 kilos, I think, which is about 154 pounds.
Wow, yeah.
You know, at the my last show I did, I think I was about 83 kilos, so about 20 pounds heavier than that. And that was smaller than what I competed before. So I think around 80 to 85 kilos is doable if I were to compete again without having to push the boundaries or anything. But I'd have to be lighter again, so I just can't do it. But I hear they just increased the weight division for the pro classic.
They did, so, yeah. But that wouldn't help any of us on the amateur level.
Yeah, no. But I do like the idea of it. I do and I don't. I think bodybuilding should just be classic. You know, just judge it differently. But that's not the way it is now. So, but the division is good. Things I would change in it. I'd get rid of those trunks.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't give you the classic look just because it's like wearing bell bottoms now. You know? It's out of date. So change the trunks and just judge the division differently and don't worry so much. They're all hitting classical poses, and I know that's the feel they're going for, but if a pose doesn't suit you, then it's not good. So you see the Labradas and the Frank Zanes and the Sean Rays, they're copying those poses, but they don't exactly have the same physiques as those guys.
That's a huge point.
They might not have the same structure. So those guys made up poses for themselves or tweaked certain poses to fit their physique.
Right.
Some guys are just jumping up there in the classic and hitting them poses, and they just look ridiculous. So those things I'd work on there. But it's good that they're trying, I guess, to put it that way, and in one way, and it's sad in another, where actual bodybuilding now, you've got a classic look and then you've got bodybuilding. So what's bodybuilding? It's just basically freaks that, well, to me, aren't appealing, and I don't think it's appealing as a bodybuilder. Like, the general population is never going to look at bodybuilders and admire the big fellas anyway, but I think bodybuilding should just go back to being classic, just judge. You know, the Mr. Olympia should be a big guy that's got a classic look, like the Lee Haney's and things like that. But
who do you like from the current crop? Like, would you say that maybe someone like Sean Roden or Cedric fit more into that category?
Yeah, I do like Sean Roden's physique, and that double bicep he has where he tilts to one side is just absolutely amazing.
And that works for him too, you know. He can do that twist.
This year I've seen much in the Olympia.
Yeah.
But that's just his stage presence is just so lacking, you know.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have commented on that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You see Lee Haney when he walks out on stage, he's got a big smile, there's lots of energy. They're holding their poses between comparisons. It's just the little things in the Labradas, they're very polished, they're very professional.
Yeah.
Just in general, I've been to a few pro shows and I've watched a lot over the years, and you know, they tend to walk out now and it's just, they don't have that, some do, but a lot don't have that enthusiasm or that professionalism, if you know what I mean, just the way they carry themselves on stage, you know, they let their stomachs hang out. And even some guys that they're saying, oh, they've got guts, they don't actually have guts, they're just relaxing them on stage. And that posing is something that you can control, and like your tanning and your oil and things like that are all in your control, so that should be spot on. Condition to a point you can control, you know, your shape obviously you can't control, so a lot of things they can control they're not controlling, and this is just general bodybuilding as well. And the things you can't control, obviously, you can't do anything about. You just have to do the best you can with your genetics. But with the things that you can control at that level, at a professional level, they should be spot on. You know, there's no excuse that you're not posing well and things like that.
How much time would you put into posing before you get on stage? Like, do you practice every day? And if so, would you practice for a certain amount of time each day? Or?
Yeah, when I was competing, I'd do my compulsories every day. And I'd start holding my poses, just do rounds. And I always did by myself, so it was quite hard to get the back poses quite right.
Okay.
But I would hold each pose for like 5 seconds, or like pick a time. And then I would do them. And then I'd do my quarter turns. And then I'd do that 2 or 3 times a day, probably, you know, starting 3 months out.
Yeah.
And then I'd progressively hold it for 10 seconds to 15 seconds, and that's usually the limit. And then I'd increase it to every day.
Nice.
But a little trick I would do is, as soon as I'd finish my cardio or workout, then I'd pose straight away.
Okay.
Because you're a little bit out of breath in that, and that kind of just helps. You know, guys, when they go backstage, they're a little bit nervous.
Right.
Then they're pumping up feverishly, trying to get a good pump, and then they walk straight on stage. So their breathing is – they're trying to control their breathing, and they're trying to pose at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's hard to look relaxed and polished when you're out of breath. So I always then trained – straight after working out, I was posed after I trained. So my heart rate's still up, and it's kind of like I've just come from backstage pumping up.
Yeah.
So I always helped a little bit, yeah. But I just love posing, and I would free pose for hours in front of my mirror when I was a teenager.
No kidding. All the
really working on the transitions. That's a big thing with the posing, is the transitions. And transitions between compulsories as well. If you look at the labradas and that's just how they moved from compulsory to compulsory pose, really made a difference in everything. So.
I think that that's a great tip, posing right after you do your cardio and training. Because you can't really explain to somebody what it's like getting out there and running through the mandatories on stage, but it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah, because you take nerves into account, and you know, you're anxious and nervous, so you and then you tend to hold your breath when you're posing, so then you turn to the front and you're taking big gulps of air, and you know, like I said, it looks your belly breathing. So yeah, you can get that under control, and always, you know, smile when you pose, and you're presenting your physique. So
yeah, I feel like there's nothing like the feeling of having done that homework and then getting on the stage and feeling strong and tight. And out of your peripheral vision, you could see the guys next to you that start to shake, you know, and they start to lose it. You know that you did your work.
Yeah, yeah. I think with that, people hold their breath and they squeeze so hard to get every striation and vein out. But I think that comes into your preparation. If you're in shape, you don't have to hold your breath and squeeze as hard as you can. You're going to show everything, and you can still breathe slightly, but you'll present much better package. And like I said, they'll be shaking and they'll be breathing out of control and belly breathing. And they might be slightly better than you, but if they can't show it, that means nothing. So you'll have an edge over them if you put that time into posing, you know. And it's, I guess the posing routine is not judged anymore, but just for me, I wouldn't want to present myself. Now, I'm probably don't have the best posing routines, but I try to put ones together that flow really well and just I'm not walking around hitting most musculars and things like that, because I think that's quite boring.
Yeah.
But if you're going to put time into your posing, definitely do the compulsory poses and nail them. And it's not just about hitting a double bicep. It's, okay, you got to go from a double bicep back to your relaxed pose and then back into a side tricep or side chest or whatever pose it is. Make those transitions nice and flow well, because you'll stand out if you do that. And you know, the judges is people too. They're going to look at you with a nice, smooth posing. And even if the guy next to you is better, if you can draw attention to yourself more, they're not looking at the better guy, so they may miss things.
Yeah.
You know, and see you. So that's my theory anyway.
No, I think it's a great theory. Absolutely. Do everything you can, as they say, like leave no stone unturned, right?
Yeah. Like one trick I used to do sometimes, because my legs were such a strong body part, is we're standing in line relaxed, I might, you know, wobble the quad and flex it every now and then while still staying, you know, and the judges will, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
And so if their eyes are on me, they're not on other people. That's how I look at it. So.
Nice. You mentioned your legs. That was the first thing I asked you about when we started discussing doing this show together. I said, you know, do you want to come on and talk about building good legs? And you said to me that legs have always been a very dominant body part for you. Can you tell me about how it is to live life with that kind of luck?
Well, it's painful sometimes. We're going to try and find pants that fit you all the time. But I started off really skinny. My legs must have been, like I said, 20 and a half inches, I think. They were, you wouldn't think that I had good genetics for legs. It's not like before I trained them they were big or anything. But when I started training up until my first comp, I trained everybody part once a week and everything kind of grew uniformly.
Okay.
And then I remember the first summer, which was about 2 months after I competed, I said, you know what? I'm on a summer break from school. I'm going to train legs twice a week because, you know, you hear about in the magazines, you know, you're going to train legs hard and that. So I said, I'll train them twice a week for about 6 weeks. And I did that and they just exploded. And I remember walking through my town one day in the shopping center and one of my guys seen me from school and they hadn't seen me for a couple of weeks. We've been on holiday, 6 weeks at least. We've been on school holidays.
Okay.
And he walked up to me and goes, holy crap, look at your legs. That's the first bodybuilding like comment I've ever got on my training, how it looked, because you know, I was pretty skinny before that. Even when I competed, no one said anything.
Okay.
He goes, holy crap, look at your legs. And I was like, what's wrong with them? I said, oh, thanks. And after that, it was like just people noticing them when I'm walking around. And yeah, and then they kind of just blew up. And then I went back to training them just once a week. And they've been a strong body part ever since. But having said that, when I was younger, I did try, I've always trained legs hard, but I went quite heavy. I think on squats, I was 7 plates aside for 6 reps. That was my best. And that was at 20 years old.
Wow.
And at the time, I think I bulked up probably too much. I think I weighed about 260.
Okay.
So, yeah, when I was 19, I think I was telling you about that show that I lost 43 kilos or 46 kilos.
Yeah, yeah.
I still wasn't in condition. That was my June 1997, and I think I competed in April after that show. So I'd lost 46 kilos for that show. Within 10 months after that show, I gained back another 47 kilos or so.
Okay.
Nearly 50, almost 100 pounds in about 10 months, and I went back to 260.
I was just going to ask you if you learned your lesson after that first time. I guess no, huh?
No, but I knew when it was time to diet down, I'd diet down.
Okay.
But, I mean, I followed, you know, I was a big, you know, Lee Priest is a bit of an idol for me.
Yeah.
And because he was doing really well in the 90s and he was a shorter Aussie guy. And I was a short Aussie guy. So, you know, I kind of lived vicariously through him when he was moving to Venice and living over there. I'd read everything in the magazines and, you know, he always bulked up a lot. So, you know, that's what I did. So I just, yeah, followed the trend at the time.
Okay. Did you eventually stop doing that then? I know you said that once you hit your conditioning again, you know, that then it was lights out and you continued to win your shows, just show after show every time you competed from there. Is it that you began to keep your body fat in check in the off season?
I never got that heavy again, no, and never out of shape that much. You know, you were young, so all you wanted to see when I'd go into the gym with a mate of mine and he was 6'2", I think, or something. And my goal was to keep up with him and his weight gains because he was bulking up at the same time. And I think he got to 118 kilos and I was like 116 at the time. I was like, damn, he's 2 kilos heavier than me. Now, remember, he's 6'2" and I was 5'5". So, yeah, I was pretty obsessed back then. But any weight was good weight, you know, when you're young. So, I never actually did that again. I went a bit crazy with that. But afterwards, competed in 2001. I think I was only about 100 kilos in the off season. So 260 pounds was my heaviest. That's about 120 kilos. So after that off season, I remember I started my diet around 100 kilos about 2 or 3 years later. And I competed 5 or 6 kilos heavier than when I came down when I was heavier. So yeah, I kept my body weight down. And that was easy for me to do because I'm not a big eater and I find it very hard to gain weight. So to get to my biggest, that 120 kilos, I was force feeding myself every day for about 10 to 12 months. And honestly, I can remember I would be eating a meal and I'd feel like vomiting and I'd sit at the sink and just hold it in and just say, yeah, past 5 minutes, it'll stay down. And then it did.
Wow.
And then I would relax for a couple of hours and I'd eat again. And just how, I don't know if it was called it dedicated or obsessed or crazy, one of those words. But,
all of them maybe, huh?
Yeah, I did what I had to do.
Wow.
And just to get that weight on. And so it was easy for me to maintain a lower body weight after that. I just ate a bit more sensibly.
Okay.
And force feeding, I've still got nightmares about that.
Wow, I bet. You know what? And when you talked about those body weights, I just assumed, because I've run into, as a diet coach, I've run into a couple different kind of people. There's the one person that always feels like they could eat more, and the person that always feels like they could be satisfied with less. I'm one of the people that could easily eat less. I just assumed you were the opposite, but I'm surprised that's not the case.
No. It's always a struggle to keep my weight up. Like now I'm about 210, 212 pounds, and I have to eat pretty consistently to stay at that weight. I could easily walk around 195, 190 with that much fuss and without eating, all the time. But and I'm not force feeding myself now. Like if I don't feel like eating, I'll have maybe a protein shake and I won't have a meal or something like that. But that's easy. But for me, if back when I was off season and that a day off, usually people will have a day off to eat whatever they want a week and sort of relax their diet a bit. A day off for me would be waking up and not having to eat. Just when I'm hungry. It's nice to eat when you're hungry, and when you're powering in a week, you think, well, to have a day where I can go 5-6 hours without eating, no problem. That's my cheat day, not eating.
I can oddly relate to that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Get so much more done.
So you're focused more now on just living the bodybuilding lifestyle and doing it because you love it. Like you said, you're not trying to force food down and stuff. Tell me a little bit more about just living the lifestyle. It sounds like that's where your passion really always had been from the start.
Yeah, well, I got into it fairly young, and obviously I started, because I just felt I was too skinny, like every kid. It's the same old story. But and then I competed. So the competition part of it has been with me almost since day one, competing and trying to improve for each comp and that. But I still just love going in the gym and training and how it made me feel and just to be good at something. Like if I was good at golf, then I guess I'd be a golfer now, things like that. But bodybuilding just suited my personality. It was something I could do. I was never into team sports or things like that. So it's just something that I enjoyed doing. So, and I was good at it, and that's why I continued. And then when the competition side of it, when I stopped that or I just got tired of it, I just, realized I just love training and improving my body. And, it gives me the freedom if I want to try a different training program, if I can diet down, if I feel like I am getting a bit too heavy, I just diet down and, walk around leaner, or if I want to bulk up, I can bulk up a little bit. There's no pressure to compete or anything like that, saying, judges telling you, you need to bring this body part up, you need to bring that body part up, you need to have this look, and always worrying about that. I can train for myself, and that's about it now. And like the gym's always there, and I train every day, and I follow bodybuilding, pretty closely, because it's just something I've always done. So I'm still interested in it, even though I'm not such a fan of it, the direction it's competitive bodybuilding is kind of heading with all the different divisions and, going to a show now, you've got to spend the whole day at the show watching bikini and men's physique and all these divisions that's not what I started for. I'm a bodybuilder. Those are the things, that's not bodybuilding. So it's kind of entwined itself into bodybuilding industry, but it's not bodybuilding, so I'm not going to sit there and watch that. And most of the competition coverage and that, you've got to listen to all that stuff first. So that's what's pushed me away from it a little bit. It's just, before you go to a bodybuilding show, you might have a sports model or something like that, and then it would be mainly bodybuilding. But now it's bodybuilding is like a bit of a sideline at shows now. But
it's like that here too.
Yeah, so I'm not. Even though I still follow it, I kind of keep it my distance from it. And like I said, it's hard to say whether I'm going to, everyone always asks me if I'm going to compete again, but you know, I may compete again if the bug hits me, but it'll be for me. So I'll bring a look to the stage that I like. So I might, you know, present like a quote unquote classic look, you know, a little not massive and bulky in that, but nice classic look in that. But I'll compete in bodybuilding. I'm not going to do any other division, and the judges can place me wherever they want because I'll be doing it for myself. So I've got nothing to prove. You know, I'm not going to go in there wanting to win because, you know, it's just a judge's opinion whether you win or lose. And I knew that when I was winning. You know, I didn't ever get a big head thinking I was the best and everything, but the judges happened to pick me that day. They could easily pick someone else if they were looking for, you know, a different look or something like that. So I think when you win in bodybuilding, you got to take it with a grain of salt. When you lose in bodybuilding, you need to take it with a grain of salt. You can't complain someone had won a show because they were, you know, not as good as you, because when you win one day, that person that got second, you can say the same thing. So, you know, take it all in and take it for what it is.
Yeah, that's a huge point, I think. I think a lot of people, it's easy to get lost in, you know, doing well and then feeling like you're on top of the world and you're the best. And you said, the very next week it could go very different.
Exactly. So if you do lose, and, you know, you might think the guy's better than you and they might be better. They might not as be good as you and beat you. Just you know, suck it up a little bit. And everyone complains so much now, especially on social media, and they'll post comparison pics of themselves and the winner. Just let it be. That guy won. Next week will be, you know, might be your week. So have fun with it. So, yeah, next time I compete, that's what it'll be. It'll just be for me.
I've always used that as motivation. If somebody beats me, then I think to myself, like, I want to come back and I want to be better. I want to make it so that the judges pick me beyond a shadow of a doubt next time. You know?
Yeah, but you always train so I can be a better me.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Yeah.
And not if someone beats me at a show and then I train all year trying to be better to beat them again, or whatever strong points I had, try to bring that up. I don't think that's the right way to do it. You need to look at what your weak points were. And I don't think I've never ever asked a judge, what can I do to improve? I've always just finished the show. Look, even if I won a show, and then I'll pick myself apart because I've been doing it long enough to know what I need to do and what, you know, the points I need to bring up. And all, you know, trusted friends might, you know, give me advice in that. But it's always pretty obvious what you need to do. We all know our weak body parts and things like that. But if a judge comes up and tells you, oh, you need to be a bit harder, and you think, oh, you know, I knew that. you should have known that. Some people don't.
I had never asked a judge's opinion after the show on what I should work on for that reason, because to me it was always evident. But this past contest I had done, I did ask, and I was told the stuff that I already knew, and I was also told, I'm sure you already know this, which, you know, it was true. But I'm going to take a different stance and say, for me, when I have placed second to somebody else who's gotten, you know, they've won, they were the better bodybuilder that day, I will take that person with me in my head to the gym for the next year. And I won't try to beat them at their own game, but I'll use that as motivation to be the best I can be, you know, to then come back. And to me, it's a catalyst. It's outside of myself. It's an outside force that gives me a reason to try harder, to think. And in some cases, the guys I'm picturing right now, when I think of that, they're some of my good friends now. Through those experiences, I've gotten to know these guys, and they're my buddies, you know. Dan Strudgeon, he's one guy. I want to give him a shout out. Dan Strudgeon, he's a great bodybuilder, and he beat me, and I've been chasing him ever since. But trying to be the best I can be.
Exactly, yeah. And sometimes I would look at, like, I'd look at people like Lee Priestley, Labradas, and Sean Raves, and I would aim for that. Not that I would ever thought I'd get to that level or beat them, but if you aim at that level, then that's the pinnacle. So I'm not going to pick another person that's under that. if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Anyway, when I did, you know, think of other people in their training and that, but usually it was just, yeah, that's the look I'm trying to get. That's the look I'm going after. So, yeah, that's worked out well for me to motivate me through training. And sometimes it's not even how you look. You just want to like the preps I've done several preps now where I never had a cheat day. I think in 2004 I dieted for 4 months and it was probably my best condition. And my cheat day was just extra rice, extra sweet potato. Like literally did not have a single thing pass through my lips. And I remember a week out from the comp, I was in bed. You can't sleep at the, you know, as a comp gets near, it's very hard to sleep. And I'll be lying in my bed 11 o'clock at night, be reading a magazine or something, and just so hungry I couldn't sleep. And then I would eat my meal before bed and I'd be lying in bed. You can't sleep. Your stomach's in knots. And I'd tell myself, if I feel like this in the morning, I'm just going to go out and have whatever I want for breakfast.
Okay.
And that kind of got me through that night. And I'd wake up and I'd think, yeah, I'm not going to cheat on my diet. That'd be fine. And then during the day, it's not too bad because you're busy. And then the next night, I distinctly remember, so I said, I'm going to go down to the 7-Eleven or somewhere and get a bag of lollies in the next hour. If I don't fall asleep in an hour, I'm going to have some lollies. And I know to fall asleep. And then I wake up and it was like that for a couple of weeks. I think I did a Queensland show and a national title. But and at the end, I could have probably got away with a cheat meal once a week. But you know what? I'm proud to say that I could do 4 months at depriving yourself so much, because after you finish with the comp, you've not only competed and you've got that achievement, but you've built your self-discipline up so much that that leads off to other things in life. So, you know, people don't realize when you're literally starving yourself. So you're in a different state of mind. Your body's saying you need to eat something, because I was very, very low calories. It was a low-fat diet.
Okay.
And there was no spike days or cheat days or refeed days, you know. Geez. People think they've got it tough now because they go 6 days and then they get a refeed day. Come on. You know, get real. And you do 4 months on – take your hungriest day and then you do 4 months of that straight without a single cheat meal, and it's that's an achievement.
I've never gone 4 months. I can say that I've never done that. That's intense.
Several times. I've done one comp prep where I've had a cheat meal a week, and the only reason I did that is because that time I was married.
Okay.
And I needed to have some, you know, just to be normal for a week so you can go out to the movies and things like that. But if I was, you know, I think I'd done a show after that when I was married, I had no cheat days either because my wife's very supportive. But, it was just – I find, you know, people think, you don't need to do that. And, you know, you might not need to do that, but it builds a mental toughness that you can't really get any other way, especially when you're training hard, and that to go through such a long time of – you know, pushing it in the gym and being on such a strict diet, I've built a mental toughness up now. If I have other challenges outside of bodybuilding, outside the gym, it helps with that, you know. Everything that when you test your self-discipline, it builds it. It's like anything else. So it has a lot of
benefit to it. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I've seen that in my own life too. And it's not something I expected to get out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you imagine, like, people they say – and comp prep coaches will say as well, you know, I've got to give this client a cheat meal because it helps them mentally and that. And so to me, that if you need to do that for mental reasons, and then you might then look at your training and say, you know what, I need to have to back off a little bit just because, you know, I need to back off. And then you might take another area, maybe your posing practice, or I might just back off my pose. One thing leads to another. You know, how you do some things is how you do everything.
Yeah.
And so you can't leave any stone unturned. Just for me personally, when I stand on that stage, and I've lost a few comps where I wasn't in condition, and I think that comp when I competed when I was 19, I lost 46 kilos. I cheated twice on that diet, and I remember I ate McDonald's once before morning cardio, and then I went because I used to run on the beach, and I went down to the beach and I was running, and I felt so freaking guilty that I stopped, made myself vomit. I vomited all that McDonald's.
Oh, man.
And that was the last time I cheated. And I said, I'm never going to cheat again.
Wow.
And I starved myself down for that show. And, my diet wasn't the best. You know, I didn't really know my protein wasn't high, but anyway, so I didn't come in condition for that show. But then I learned, you know, I kept my protein up high, and the next show I did really well. But that feeling when I stood on stage and I was in condition, and, you know, I was only, you know, cheating that once or twice, I just thought, you know what, I didn't do everything I could have done, and it was the worst feeling I had. And I knew I lost the show when I was backstage. The guy was better condition. And I said to myself then, I said, I'm never, ever going to do something where I look back on it for a competition and say I didn't give it my all. And so after that, you know, I never did, and I haven't lost a show since. And my condition's always been good, luckily. But when I do a comp, it's 100%, you know.
Yeah. You're telling me about, you know, how it sounds like a lot of your training has been very basic and very heavy stuff. You know, your legs were definitely, like we said, a strong suit. Is there anything that wasn't as strong that you had to put more thought into it developing?
Well, legs always come up, and like upper body, I've always worked on my upper body to bring it up. My arms have got a good peak on them.
Yeah.
That really measure, you know. Okay. Super big, but they just look big because I don't know if you've seen some photos. I've got quite a nice shape and peak to them, so I'm lucky in that respect. My back, you know, I could critique myself all day, so I just general body size. And at the moment, I'm training legs once a week, and I'm trying a bit more high frequency upper body, so doing upper body at least twice a week.
Okay.
Yeah, seeing how they go. I'm not eating like I used to now, but it's just playing around with things. But back in the day, I trained everything once a week. Because that's just how things were done back then.
Yeah.
And every now and then when I needed to bring up a body part, so sometimes I did it with arms or chest, or train that body part twice a week. And yeah, it's just when I was in my early 20s, I was pushing some good weight. But then I started to I've never really been seriously injured at all. I've had a little bit of tendonitis here and there, but I've always grew up, you know, reading about Dorian Yates and things like that, where you control the negative and positive is a good explosion, controlled and form. So I've always stuck not so much to training styles, but just principles. And I'll take bits and pieces from everything I've read, because over the years I've read every magazine since the mid 80s, you know, the guys training before me would hand me their magazines and I'd read them cover to cover. So I was, you know, just obsessed, like I said, back then. And I would just take things from everyone. So I'd read an article about Rich Gaspari, and he was saying, you know, he was pulling a lot of weight for his back, and his back only started to grow when he halved the weight. And I think it was Ed Connors one day got in the gym with him, and he was doing seated rows, and, you know, he's trying to impress the guy doing seated rows. And so I think it was Ed Connors, I'm not sure, but he put his knee behind Gaspari as he was doing seated rows.
Yeah.
And he jammed his knee into his back. And so when he came back, he had to contract his lats around his knee.
Ah.
And that halved his weight. And he said his back started to develop since then.
No kidding.
So those kind of stories I listened to, and I put them in the memory bank. God, it was 20 years ago now, and I still remember it. And I've got just hundreds of stories like that. So when I'm training, that's what I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah.
Just different ways to hit the muscle and that. Because when I've done progressive resistance, you know, adding weight to the bar every week, and that's when I got my squat up to, I think, 7 plates a side. I don't know what that is in pounds, but I think dumbbells are about 160, 170-pound dumbbells. And so my lifts were impressive, and that was at 20 years old.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous strength for 20. That's ridiculous strength for anybody, really.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was never a strong guy before that, but, you know, I added the little bits of weight to the bar every week, and I was meticulous about it. I did that for 12 months.
Okay.
And but you can only get – you can't do that for so long. You know, you can't keep adding weight to the bar.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, squatting 2,000 pounds. So now my training's evolved over the past decade or so to where I look for just intensity techniques to try and still progress. So still progression, but either, you know, you could, if you're doing 10 reps with 100 pounds, you know, on the dumbbell curl, you could add another 5 pounds to that, and that's one way to progress. Or you can add 2 seconds to your negative repetition, and that's progression. You know, I think, and when people come up to me and say, how do you get big legs in that? You know, I say, well, what are you doing now? And they'll tell me what they're doing. I say, do something different.
Yeah.
Oh, but what? So I don't care. Do something different. Because if you, you know, squatting 3 or 4 plates a side And they usually tell me how much they can squat, and I still don't get legs. How much do you squat? I said, well, I rarely squat anymore because it's just not a movement that I like.
Okay.
And if I do, I'll squat at the end of my workout and I'll put, you know, a plate and a half, two plates aside.
Really?
And they said, oh, and they can't understand that. And I said, well, if you're squatting four plates aside and I have bigger legs than you, obviously there's a genetic component.
Yeah.
But it's not working for you, is it?
Yeah.
You know, and you increase the weight on the squat, so you need to do something different. So you can either keep squatting, and like I said, you can slow the negative portion down, you can increase your reps, you can pre-exhaust it with another exercise, or you can drop it all together and try something else. So, you know, some things, well, everything works some of the time, nothing works all of the time.
Yeah.
And that's very, very true in bodybuilding. So I think there's no one right program or way to do it. There's so many different ways, and I think you need to hit it. You need to utilize everything at your disposal. So
it sounds like part of this is just a matter of being in the gym long enough that you can experiment with different things and find out what works for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, back when I started, we never had the internet, so it was probably, in one way, we didn't have the information at our fingertips, and I often wonder, I think, what would it be like if we had the internet back when I started? And you know what? I don't think I would have made as good a gains, because we would get a magazine 1 month and we'd see one or two articles or sample training programs in there, and I'd follow it. You know, I'd see Lee Priest. Oh, this is actually a good example. I read an article on how Lee Priest trains arms. Back then it was kind of new. Now everyone knows, but it was, you know, just 20 sets for buys and tries, and that was a lot of volume. And so, you know what, I followed his arm workout, and I did it once a week, and I think I did it for 3 or 4 months, because the magazines only come out, you know, back then, I think it was every 2 months we'd get a magazine. So you had to follow that for a certain amount of time, where nowadays you look online and you'll have another routine in 5 minutes that you can chop and change every day.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I did that, his arm workout for a couple of months, and my arms blew up. They got to 20 inches when yeah, I think you just need to stick to something for a certain amount of time, but don't let it become like a religion or anything like that. You need to know when it's time to change.
Yeah. I'm sure your diet's probably a lot more well-rounded. Do you focus on health foods?
I do, and that's a lot from listening to Carl Lenore on Superhuman Radio, like discussing. We've been following him for 10 years, so he's more – he calls it physical culture, which I really like. And
yeah.
It's not just about being, you know, massive and how you look anymore. It's more, you still want to look good, but you want to be healthy as well. So, yeah, there's a few little things. You know, I always take my vitamins and minerals, and there's certain ones I take. I kind of call them like my foundation supplements. So they're the ones I take all the time. Bodybuilding supplement-wise, I use a protein powder and some creatine. It's kind of come full circle like I did when I started training. Yeah, and basically, like I said, you know, if I want to bring my weight up and put some size on, then I'll increase my protein and do all the things that, you know, and cycle my carbs around a little bit. But if I want to bring my weight down, then I drop my carbohydrates, obviously, and things like that. But more for an eye towards health as well, because, you know, it's not get big or die trying attitude. I think that's a bit silly. You want to get big, look good, and live as long as you can. So, yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your diet today? Let me ask you, are there any specific recommendations you could make that would lead me to a little bit more of a healthy plan than just eating, you know, the chicken and the rice?
Yeah. Well, I try to have lots of veggies and a bit of fruit, and I just try to eat whole foods, you know, like, I mean, I rely on shakes quite a bit, but my shakes don't have any sweeteners or artificial colors or flavors or anything like that.
Okay.
Don't like artificial sweeteners and flavorings and things like that, because I just find that upset my digestion a little bit.
Interesting.
And there's a huge debate on it, whether they're good for you and bad for you. I think you like your Diet Pepsi or Diet Coke,
I do. I have some Coke Zero sitting right here, but you're making me wonder and think whether I should be drinking it or not.
Well, you know, there's all these things about cancer and everything is going to cure you, and I don't think it's that bad. But I've seen a lot of studies on PubMed and things like that, and what I've experienced myself is just their effect on digestive, on your good bacteria. in your stomach. So in the supplement world, you see these things that, you know, gut health's a big thing now. It's a bit of a trend that, you know, it's all about your gut health, and which is good. That's we need to be looking at things like that.
Yeah.
And then you have a product with like a greens product or something like that that helps, you know, with the digestion and gives you fiber and everything like that. And it's got artificial sweeteners in it, which you can actually study that can destroy your gut bacteria, you know, by a certain percentage. I think it's up to 50%, the study I read. So I tend to stay away from them, but I actually stayed away from them before I read any study, because when I'd have them, I would get a little bit bloated or gassy, or not greatly, but I cut them out. I don't know why I cut them out. I just cut them out, and I just started feeling better. And so I kind of stay away from all that kind of stuff. Haven't had a soft drink for God knows how long.
No kidding.
Yeah, and all my protein powders now for many years have been, I just get they taste all right. They're sweetened with cinnamon, some of them, and the cacao or coca.
Yeah,
and I just feel like my digestion has been a lot better since then. As far as my other diet, I eat pretty much what I want. I know to eat protein regularly and have my carbohydrates. Like I said, I don't weigh much food and things like that anymore.
Okay.
If I want to put a little weight on, I know just eat more carbohydrates. So I have, you know, extra rice, things like that. And but if I feel like having some junk food, I'll eat some junk food. Or, you know, my wife goes out, we might have a burger or something like that. We'll have a burger. So when I'm not as regimented. And I never really was in the off season, to be honest. For a competition, yeah, different story. But just instinctively, you know, you get that protein in, you know, four or five times, six times a day, and you have enough carbohydrates, and I'll kind of go by the mirror. If I'm feeling a bit too fat, then, you know, I can cut back on things. And
sure.
I'm leaning up and don't really want to, then I want to put some more size on, I just increase my food intake. It's very simple. I think people overcomplicate it a lot nowadays, and with all this dieting for – you know, dieting for comps one thing, then you got a reverse diet when you come off, and then you got lean gains and that in the off season. And to me, that kind of takes the fun out of it, you know. And I can stay relatively lean, and not so much it's my metabolism. I think I just you get a intuition of what to eat, and you know what to eat. I put on my plate, okay, I'm having, you know, I'm going to cut my carbs out today. I don't need to write it down and track it by the gram. I just eat less carbohydrates
for a couple of
cycling like that.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been doing this for so long too. You use the word intuitive, that it sounds like you have learned to be very intuitive.
But it's like I said, a lot of things for me have come full circle. So what I'm doing now is what I did at the start when I made some gains in that. But in between, no, I've gotten diets off for one comp for Dave Palumbo. I only followed that for about 4 weeks, and I've gotten training programs and a diet when John Meadows first started doing it in 2013. I think one of my sponsors paid for me to work with George Farah for a very, very short time. I let that go. And they all had something to offer, but what I found is no one's got any secrets. You know, I still see people now saying, oh, I've got to work with this person, I want to work with that person. Everyone's got a coach. And they knew, you know, they've got to go through it and kind of learn for themselves. But there's some people that their whole career they've had someone from their local show up until whatever they're doing now. And I've done a lot of shows on my own, and I've done a few shows with, you know, the guidance of some people. And what I found is that they know nothing more, really. They've just got a different way of applying it. So you know, I keep things very basic. So if someone comes to me, I've done a few comp preps myself, or if someone wants advice, I literally can write them a diet in 5 minutes, and I say, follow that. And I said, but make sure you follow it. And one guy did it one day, and it was just to put some muscle on.
Okay.
And he followed it, and he goes, he made great gains within a month. And I was like, he goes, you know, holy hell, you know, you wrote that on a piece of paper in the gym. I didn't charge him for it. But you know what? It wasn't in what I wrote. It was that he followed it consistently.
That
was the key, you know. And I tell people, I say, you know what, how much protein should I eat? How much carbohydrate should I eat? So look, 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, that's as old as the hills. Start with that, and then add in 1 gram of carbohydrate per pound.
Okay.
And then you do that for a week. You may lose weight, you may gain weight. And then increase your protein to 1.5 grams. You may lose weight, you may gain weight, and judge it by that. Then add in another gram of carbohydrate, you know, and take it from that. Yeah. Take it back to the simplest possible way of doing things and then build on that and then track your results and see how that works for you. And then as far as nutrient timing, things like that, if you've got 200 grams of protein you want to eat that day and your lifestyle allows you to eat 4 or 5 meals or 6 meals, whatever you decide on doing, divide 200 by 6 and that's how much protein you get. Same with your carbohydrates. Don't worry about, you know, at the start putting around workout times and that, just an even amount throughout the day.
You like them even. Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
I remember Chris Aceto's got a really good book. I really like Chris's, how he's thinking on things, called Championship Bodybuilding.
Yeah.
You know, I've could have made so much more money doing comp preps than that, because another guy came up and asked me to do his comp prep. And I just said, mate, buy that Championship Bodybuilding book and follow it, because that's what I've done. That was those same principles that I've had in the magazines and that, and I've only just I purchased his book several years ago. And it's such basic advice, but it works, you know. So his protein and carbohydrates were basically the same throughout the day. He'd have a little bit before, a little bit more before training, a little bit more after training, and that's what I'd done for years, even before I read that book. And I was like, wow, you know, it is really that simple.
Hmm.
From the basics, then you can build. So if you want to take your carbs away at night and put more post-training, try that and see how it works.
Yeah.
If you take your carbohydrates away from your meal one, which is a big thing now, try that and see what it works. But just start at the very, very basics, and you can teach yourself. You know, you don't need to pay someone $2,000 or whatever it is to tell you to have 200 grams of protein a day and 200 grams of carbohydrates or whatever it is. And all they're doing is seeing what results happen with you when you could do that yourself. But I don't know, it's such a big thing now. And I'm not anti-coach. Sometimes a good eye can do, you know, big work wonders, especially for competition prep. But
sure,
I think coaches just relied on a little bit too much now.
I could see that, absolutely. And in the people that I've worked with, I want them to learn from the experience and eventually, you know, ideally not depend on somebody else to tell them what to do. I want it to be a learning experience. And I think it can be beneficial from there. But I agree too, man. It's too often relied on. You know, I love that idea too. It's something, because I've gotten away from keeping the carbs split up evenly through the day. I really do like that though. And I think for myself, that's something, just thinking about it now, how simple that is, it's something I want to get back to.
Because then there's something, like I said, you can manipulate it from there, but you have to start from somewhere. You can't start with an intra drink with, you know, God knows what, you know, and it's just too complicated, I think. And just one of the best, I'd say, in 2004, comp prep people that helped me, and it wasn't even called comp prep, it was just a mate helping a mate back then, but was John Davies.
Okay.
Over here in Australia, he runs the World Gyms, and he's competed at the Mr. Olympia and that. And I knew him after the 2001 show, and I asked him, you know, can you just give me some feedback on a show that I was doing in 2004 when I won the Mr. Australia? Yeah. So, you know, we started emailing each other about 3 or 4 months out, and, you know, I emailed him my diet, and he came back to me saying, yeah, that looks good, let's start on that. And it was, even back then at my, you know, I was going for a national title, it was, I think, 1.5 grams of protein per pound and a couple grams of carbohydrate, you know, spread out evenly throughout the day. And I started on that, and, you know, my weight dropped down a little bit, and I adjusted it along the lines doing that. But I would adjust it myself, and I'd send the diet off to John every week, and he goes, yeah, I like that, or he would change a few things in it. And it was very, very basic, and he just kept an eye on me. I sent photos every week and just, you know, pass on suggestions and things like that with training, but never really took over. He was actually giving me feedback and teaching me a few things as well. Like,
that's cool.
What he learned. And I remember our body fat test. This is because there's so much on, you know, what percentage of body fat are you? And they do extra scans and all this. I said, John, I don't have calipers, because he was just, all he would do would be, he'd take calipers over 7 or 9 sites.
Yeah.
And give the total millimeter reading to the person, not even work out the percentage most of the time. And because percentage means nothing, it's how you work it out. So, you know, whether you're 5% or 6%, that doesn't impress me. What impresses me is what I'm looking at. And so anyway, I said, John, I don't have calipers and I'm by myself. So I was living by myself, so I couldn't get anyone to do it. He goes, all right, get your finger and your thumb, pinch the fattest part of your stomach and take a photo of that. And I did that every week.
No way.
When you grab the fattest part of your stomach with your finger and thumb and it feels the same as the back of your hand, you're in shape.
That's
the biggest thing ever. And we did that. That's a Mr. Olympia competitor getting me ready. And I won the Mr. Australia at that time. So,
damn.
Yeah, I won the Queensland IFBB and the Australian IFBB. And at the same month, my training partner, Scott Burgess, he won the Queensland NABBA and the Queensland and the national title, NABBA title. So we'd won, we beat everyone in Australia that year in both federations. Two guys in a local gym in a little town.
That's kick ass. And I love the simplicity of it too. I love the simplicity of the approach.
Yeah. And we didn't, I never used pre-workouts back then. I think I had a protein powder, multivitamin, what I use as a fat burner. I think No Dose was one of my fat burners, which is like a caffeine tablet.
Right.
And I might have added some, you add like the cold tablet Sudafed or something to that. And that's about as crazy as it got.
Wow.
But yeah, simple. You can, you know, think people, it's just so complicated now. If I was starting now, I would be, even I get confused now when I like to read and see what's new and that. And my wife's like, stop looking stuff up. And she goes, what are you training? And I go, I might train a new training program. And she goes, and I get confused and I say, should I do this? Should I do that? You know, and I've got 25 years experience. So I can imagine what it's like for a newbie.
Yeah.
With everything, you know. I couldn't afford to compete now. So I think if I was starting out to pay all these coaches and everything, I'd go broke.
Yeah. Well, James, this has been really cool, man. And this is exactly what I expected. Just everything I followed about you, man. This is it's a very refreshing interview. you what?
Hopefully I didn't talk too much. Or,
no, man, this is
I have a coffee. I can tend to talk to you.
This is great.
This is what it's about, you know, not where you place on stage when you're oiled up. It's in the gym and talking about that stuff. That's what I love.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I feel honored. I've been telling my wife about you guys for weeks now, and she even knows you. I'll put you on in the car when we're driving. So
no kidding. Yeah.
She's a big fan too.
Well, I guess that you know, we're lucky. You're lucky that she's tolerant. She's allowed you to do contests and not complain about that. And she's letting you listen to advices and bodybuilding nerds. Right.
She's won a few national titles herself too, so she's pretty humble about that. But she's kind of moved on and doing other stuff now.
She was a figure competitor, right?
Yeah. She's done that. She's on the cover of Oxygen magazine. She writes for Oxygen magazine now in Australia. And but she's kind of stepped back from competition and she's gone more towards holistic type of eating and that for women and things.
No kidding.
So I'll give a shout out to her. She's got a Facebook page called Real Women Eat, and it's a really fantastic site.
Hell yeah. And what was the name of that again?
It's called Real Women Eat.
Okay.
And it's just for ladies that, you know, that don't want to diet for chicken and rice, you know, when they're just trying to lose a little bit of weight. And it's more of a holistic approach to health and well-being and that for women, that it's a healthy way of eating. You know, this industry can breed a lot of unhealthy eating habits for women.
Absolutely.
And she's been through it herself. So she's kind of turned that around and made a way of doing a more realistic approach, if you want to call it that. But, yeah, check the page out. She's got heaps of articles. She's really good.
And her name is Belinda Potter, correct?
Belinda Potter, that's it. Thank you for having me on, too. It's been an honor. It's awesome.
Well, guys, this has been James Potter for Advices Radio. This has been episode number 24. I'm Scott McNally. Keep grinding. That's got nothing.